Hey, everybody. Jeff Prather back with you on the Prather Point in the Perfection Auto Works studios, running here at the last minute because John said, hey, you better stop talking to Maurice and stop gabbing out there and get in here and get the show going. So it's KVOI.com, 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Call in at 520-790-2040. And great show again today. And the first thing is, so for us warriors and veterans like Maurice is as well, this was a big week because Sergeant David Bellavia was awarded the Medal of Honor at the White House. In case you don't know that, significance of that for those of us who served is the Medal of Honor is our highest decoration that can be given. And usually it is posthumously, it is awarded after death, and it's above and beyond the call of duty. And so it's great to see a living vet get that, and an infantry, Army infantry sergeant. And it was really cool. He wrote a book a while back, so he earned the Silver Star back in, I don't know, but the event happened in 2004, way back when I was still on active duty, I guess. He even wrote a book about it called House to House. It's a great book if you want to read it. A lot of us in the profession have read it. He assaults and clears a house by himself, happens to have a journalist behind him. For those of you who know anything about tactics, you're not supposed to be able to clear a room by yourself, much less a house in the dark, but he had to do that because his guys were under fire. One of the last insurgents he killed, he had to kill hand to hand. He had to undo his multiplier because he didn't have a straight blade out there. It's kind of why I ended up making the Prather War Buoy, talking to a lot of veterans that were not carrying fixed blades at that time. So I don't usually talk about that, but yeah, I got my own knife, Prather War Buoy. Look it up. It's got great reviews. Real proud of that. But Sergeant David Bellavia, Medal of Honor recipient this week at the White House. First living recipient from the Iraq War. Touches me at home because I was activated from 03 to 04 for that, although I didn't deploy. I'm nothing like those heroes. But I've known some heroes. And he didn't smile through the whole ceremony because that stuff is really still close to home with him. But he did call up his entire team, which has never happened before. So I forget the Marine's name who didn't take President Obama's phone call because he said, tell me, I got to work. Tell him to call me back at break. But Medal of Honor winners are not winners. I've been corrected before. Recipients, you don't win it, you receive it. Our real special breed. I've gotten to hang out with them. I was at an event one time up in Las Vegas, probably 300-500 vets in the room, and Steven Seagal walks in and nobody pays any attention to him because we're all talking and hanging out with the Medal of Honor recipient because those are our stars. This Bellavia has even been compared to Audie Murphy. So In our area, Audie Murphy was, of course, the real inspiration for Captain America. And he never became a big muscle guy. He was always a little skinny guy, but the most decorated soldier of World War II and a real skinny, wimpy guy that had just a heart of fire to save his men. So that was very significant. And if you didn't see the ceremony or hear any of his speeches, it's well worth listening to. And the great thing also about that is it looks like Sergeant Bellavia is going to go into politics. He's going to run for office. He wrote a book. And as he ran into the room, the darkened room, and cleared floors by himself and fought hand to hand, there happened to be a journalist filming behind him. So that was providential as well. But he's going to go into politics, which is great because all politicians are like fish. They all start to stink after a while. So if I have a choice, against an incumbent and somebody running for office, I go for the guy or gal running for office. If it's between a civilian and a veteran, I take the veteran always because the veterans have a concept of selfless service and professional honor that rarely exists around politicians. And we're seeing this. One of the things Bellavia said is, and something I say all the time, but he's certainly worth more listening to than I am, is he's saying this is the next greatest generation. They've been fighting longer and harder, something I say all the time. And now they're starting to get out and they're going into business and they're going into politics and they're raising families. And they are really going to do the same job they did of protecting the nation, but on the long run, off the battlefield. And so that's really good news as well. So check it out. Check out Sergeant David Bellavia, Medal of Honor recipient. And if you're in New York, vote for him. You couldn't find a better, and I don't even know what party. I think he's Republican, but that doesn't matter. That's not the important point. Also, breaking news today is President Trump makes history and walks into North Korea. And that is incredible. So I was stationed in South Korea up near the DMZ at Dongducheong at Camp Hovey, not all the way up, but ways up there. And, you know, that's been a state of war between those two countries forever. And the Korean War is just in a state of suspension. And you see all the roads, they got big blocks and they got holes drilled in so you could blow all the roads if they were coming across. So that is really historic. Of course, he actually stepped across the DMZ. Of course, earlier, I think it was last year, I talked about how the soldiers took down the fence, which is amazing because I think in my lifetime, they were killing each other. The North Koreans were shooting soldiers defecting, and there was a famous incident when we were chopping down a tree, and they came out and axed one of our soldiers, I believe, if I recall correctly. So the fence came down, the wall came down, the soldiers came across, shook hands, and now the president and the chairman up there just met, and it was pretty much impromptu, although I don't think it was as impromptu as the White House would have it, because Secret Service would be freaking out to cover POTUS, President of the United States, in that situation. But it is still huge. And why it is huge is really significant. And of course, so I was reading on Instagram, and Instagram's where you want to go because that's where all the youth are now. They're not on Facebook anymore. That's for us old guys. But Instagram is where, and I don't even know what Snapchat and all that other stuff is, but Instagram, they're on there. And I can tell because I read the comments, but the comments of Trump crossing into North Korea, the first sitting United States president to ever do that, is incredible. And that's what even the translator said as the North Korean chairman spoke with him. And that's also a lot of courageous because, I mean, he is on enemy soil, and there's no more closed country in the world than North Korea. Look at a Google photo at night. There's no lights. They're like 40 or 50 years behind us. They're eating each other and they're eating grass because they're starving to death. And there's your communism and socialism if you want to see what it's like. So personal courage to go across there alone is, I got to give him big credit for. And then the strategic implications of this, we've already seen that, and that is that they're not lobbing missiles over Japan anymore. But there's even greater implications of that, and of course, the Dems aren't going to give any credit. The other comments in the Instagram, I was reading the Instagram comments of, hey, you know, great courage, great big ones, Mr. President. But the other comments were, watch the MSN, watch the mainstream media, what I call the propaganda press, spin this. Trump colludes with North Korea. That was just, so everybody's aware of the propaganda now, except for the propagandists themselves. Maybe they're just talking to each other. But that is really significant. The other thing that's really significant about that is the long game. So Trump, everybody wants to act like Trump's in chaos and Trump is irrational. That's not the case at all. I'll explain that when we come back from this break because I'm already going over, but that is really important. And I'll be right back with you after this break. This is Jeff Braith on the Prather Point and the Perfection Auto Works Studios. Right back with you. Perfection Auto Works Studios, AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Yeah, make sure you stop in to Perfection Auto Works. They've been around for 25 years. The same guys there for 20 years. Top shop in Tucson. 250 plus Google reviews. Home of the free 26-point inspection. Warranty for 1 year or 12,000 miles on all repairs. Keep your business local and go see Mike Emery and talk to a caring, concerned patriot. And thanks to Kirk there, hat tip. It was Captain Boniface who was murdered by the North Koreans in 1976 when they were down clearing trees out in the front there. And also, and you can always, you know, you can email me at info@warriorschool.com with stuff. But I appreciate getting the text to help me out with my memory while the show's going on. And also, Kirk points out, I had Kirk on the show a while back. Kirk and I were commissioned together back in 1984. Oh my gosh. And we both got to serve in Special Forces, different parts. I was just an MI guy. But what Kirk also points out is that Trump suggesting the meeting and then Kim responding to that shows that Trump is in a superior position. He's being a proactive position, and Kim was being very receptive to that, and you could hear the translators. And so that is incredible. Of course, the comments that were going on Instagram, and I'm sure on YouTube, were amazing. Another historic first for Trump. But then the immediate comment after that was, watch the Dems and the MSM, the mainstream media, spin this. Trump colludes with North Korea, whatever. So everybody's aware of what's going on. A hometown spin on that is Stephanie Grisham is the new White House press secretary. She's replacing Sarah Sanders, who did a great job. And she's from Arizona, right here. She worked for Tom Horn. And she was a big Trump supporter and arranged a lot of things in Arizona. So again, I'm always telling you, we are on the cutting edge of freedom right here in Arizona. Fast and Furious begins right here in Arizona. The border crisis is right here. We are on the cutting edge of everything here. But Stephanie Grisham was there, and she was hurt. She was hospitalized in a scuffle with North Korean bodyguards. And you can look at the tape, and you can hear her trying to get the press through the throng so that they can film. So I'm going to say that again. Trump's new press secretary, Stephanie Grisham from Arizona, was hurt scuffling with North Korean bodyguards to help the American press. Now, just like Trump should get the Nobel Peace Prize for opening up relations with North Korea, Stephanie should get whatever they do. I know they give themselves all kinds of awards constantly, just like the Hollywood does. But they won't give it to her because she's Trump's press secretary. But she got hurt standing up for them. remember that, and you know I'll come back to that when they start savaging her the way they've savaged Sarah Sanders and everybody else. But the long so keep her in your prayers. The long game there that is important is to note that Trump always negotiates from a position of leverage. And why is that so important? Because he's starting to change economic conditions. Remember, the left is all about globalism, no borders, nothing. But we're seeing yellow vests in France. We're seeing Brexit. We're seeing the protests in Hong Kong. We're seeing Mexico just sent 15,000 troops to the border to control that. So America is beginning to lead the world. In fact, I got a note from a friend of mine over in England who was listening, old friend that we were in Chile together, South America, back in 1985, and comes and visits every once in a while. But the real thing here is that we have, after the Gulf War, China decided to do total war on us, and that meant economic war in every area. And so we're overly dependent now upon them for so many things, for manufacturing. But at the same time, China's building a middle class. That's the way to defeat communism, socialism is Coca-Cola, jeans, and rock and roll is a middle class developing. Now, it's not there yet, but it can become there. And the same thing can happen with North Korea, because North Korea is going to need a huge leg up. And so any work, any kind of income, any kind of capitalism coming into North Korea is better than eating each other and eating grass. It's a step up. It's a win-win for the whole world. Now, you're never going to hear that in the propaganda press, but it'd be good for North Korea. It'd be good for South Korea. It'd be good for China. It'd be good for us. That's the long game that's happening there. And that's part of Providence, is that we don't need the Middle East for oil anymore. We found more natural gas here. We just also found a huge supply of fresh water, because water is going to become a scarce commodity in the years to come. But that is hugely significant. And eventually history will recognize Trump for that. But don't expect anytime soon. The Nobel Peace Prize is just given out. Remember, Obama got it for getting elected, not for doing anything at all. And don't expect Stephanie Grisham to get anything. But tough Arizona lady scuffling with North Korean bodyguards. That's real interesting. Also on the border, very unfortunate to say that we've lost two of our soldiers deployed there in this month. It was PFC Kevin Christian and PFC Stephen Hodges, both suicided June 1st and June 23rd. At least they say it's suicide. I don't know. I put out some feelers, but I've been off the border for a long time. I do know that although there aren't 22 of us killing ourselves every day, like the propaganda press puts out, the younger soldiers are suiciding more. The younger vets are. And it's real high in SOCOM. So keep them in your prayers. It could be suicide, although, you know, they were saying about one of them that Christian was a real positive force and always willing to share more. So that makes me think that there may be more to that story. I can tell you from working in Nogales for 10 years that there's endemic corruption everywhere because the cartels have so much money to do anything. Other things that you're not hearing about on the border is that there are 1 or 2,000 illegals. I'm not saying undocumented immigrants. Illegal immigrants is what they are. They're breaking the law in quarantined and with serious diseases. We're starting to see, you know, measles, all kinds of terrible diseases come back, and that stuff is spreading out. And that will end up in a culling of the herd. If people don't wake up, life is way too easy now in America. They don't think they need to get vaccinations. We don't think they need to have borders. Without borders, legal immigrants would not have any place to come. It would all be the same. But the left wants to drag everything down so that everybody is at the same low level. You don't see great breakthroughs coming out of socialist communist countries. You see great breakthroughs coming out of democratic capitalist countries. So that's really important. Switching topics here. I just had to laugh because the New York Times is got a big story about how American missiles have been found in a Libyan rebel compound. And they're making big deals because these are javelins, which are considerable weapons, and they are marked USA, and they are supposed to be going to the United Arab Emirates. That's the end user. So when you're doing ITARs, which is selling weapons, because our biggest export is weapons, believe it or not, should be others, but it's not. It's weapons. Eisenhower warned us about the military-industrial complex, but there's a end-user certificate when you sell weapons, and the end-user certificates was for the United Arab Emirates, and these ended up in Libyan rebels, and they were making a big deal. New York Times making a big deal about this, saying that on Wednesday they captured Geryon, which are rebels against the government forces. And I just had to laugh and tell you about this because they are suggesting in the article that President Trump has had a much closer relationship with his Emirati and Saudi allies in the Persian Gulf, a closeness that has left some wondering if it has emboldened the Emiratis in Libya. So now, it's certainly valid to say the Saudis are not our friends. We just buy oil from them. Almost all of the 9/11 attackers were Saudi, following Wahhabism. Wahhabism is the doctrine that America is the great Satan, Israel is the little Satan, and Saudis are not our friends. And we don't really need their oil anymore. They're making some headway. They're coming off their oil economy in the next 20 years. But the irony of trying to attach Trump to running weapons just had me rolling. So Benghazi is in Libya. Benghazi, so who was running weapons, and hopefully I'm going to have a guest on here the second half of the show, is the first covert operation of the Obama-Clinton cabal regime was Fast and Furious, was running guns. And then it was Benghazi. Benghazi, it's a video. And they were running weapons under a CIA project into Libya to overthrow Gaddafi. And then they were running them to Syria. In fact, the last time I think I was on the Laura Ingraham show or national TV or something, I was talking that Trump is finally putting an end to the covert operations that began with Fast and Furious. But you can look up Timber Sycamore on Wikipedia is the classified CIA operation supplying weapons to the Syrians. And that goes on under Obama. So it's just hilarious that after the Obama administration did covert operation after covert operation, running guns to Mexico, to Libya, to Syria, Trump finally puts an end to it. And now all of a sudden, the propaganda press is trying to attach Trump to the weapons. It's just unbelievable. Whatever they accuse you of, they're doing. I have learned that the hard way, believe me, after over a decade of being attacked by them. So, and remember, I talked about the Hammer a couple of shows back, how they were spying on Trump through our Five Eyes intelligence partners, but they're also spying on all of us. All of you were part of that. So they're running scared, though. So while Trump is stepping into North Korea almost totally spontaneously, although I think there was prior meetings there that we're not being told about, and that's fine. The Dems and MSNBC can't even run a debate without the microphones going bad and that all fouling up. But don't worry, Google and Facebook is going to be out there trying to hack the convention. They took that video, but Veritas got that video out that they are going to stand up against the right. But anyway, I'm running over again, and hopefully I'm going to get a guest on here. Hopefully he's going to call in shortly. And this is Jeff Prather on the Prather Point, back with you after this break. Obama, another covert operation of Obama and Clinton was Timber Sycamore, is running guns and weapons into Libya. And Trump ended all of that. But I want to switch topics now and bring on a guest. So Vince Cefalu is like me, he is a veteran. He was in the Marines. I was in the Army. Like me, he was a federal special agent. He was one before me. He was ATF. I was DEA. I worked with them. Like me, he got fired. But he's about 10 years ahead of me in everything. He got fired like three times. I got fired once. He became a whistleblower. He is like the first, I believe, whistleblower of Fast and Furious, and stood up, and like me, he's a whistleblower. And then we got together. I had him at a Tea Party rally to speak years ago. And then I was on the air here, and Charles walked by and handed me his book, and I read his book, and it was really a great book. I was really impressed. And I've talked to him a couple times over the years, not as much, but I wanted to have him on to talk about his book and Fast and Furious and about government corruption. So Vince, so good to talk to you again. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me, buddy. I'm sorry we had such a hard time hooking up. It's been crazy.
No, not at all. So the book is Rat Snakes, and it's a great book. It's well written. I mean, there's a lot of books out there, and some of them aren't so-so, but I really liked yours, and I learned a lot, you know, from it. And,
Tell me it made you smile. Tell me a couple times you chuckled and enjoyed the stories, and I'm good.
Oh, definitely. And it's great, you know, to see Jay in there. Jay Bird, because I worked with him, you know, went back when he was skinny in the old days.
Oh, back when he was skinny. That's hilarious.
Well, he's all muscled up now, but I saw him at the Freedom Fest last year. He was the speaker and we got to talk a little bit. And what made you write the book, Rat Snakes?
You know, a bunch of us had been roundtabling that idea for years. We would be sitting there either at some operation or some debriefing or after party, wheels up party, and we were like, oh my God, somebody needs to write this down. And I just finally did, because these people would have never been heard of. No one would have ever known who they are or what they've done or what they sacrificed. And I was just in that, you know, that sweet spot where I got to hang out with all these operators and got to see some really cool stuff. So, you know, it was labor of love. It was awesome. It was just, I laughed while the whole time I was writing that thing. I was laughing at my friends and our insanity. It was really fun.
Well, I liked how you immediately from the opening shared the spotlight with a lot of your fellow UCs, undercovers. You know, I was never an undercover, for those of you listening. I was the raid guy. You know, Vince was there's a little subculture circles in there. But I liked how you shared the spotlight. That reminded me of Audie Murphy's book of how he was always sharing the spotlight. I liked how you were very blunt with a lot of what you were talking about. And I learned a lot about, you know, when I first, and you were the first Fast and Furious whistleblower, weren't you?
You know, I don't know that I was the absolute first. I had stood up that website because of my dispute, my lawsuit against the agency whistleblowing. And, the information came to pass on the website and then was made public through the congressional and Senate subcommittees who were investigating it. So we had a hand in it. I had a hand in it, no doubt. But there were, you know, far larger people in that circle, Darren Gill and Carlos Canino and some of those that, you know, had to testify for Congress about the lunacy of the whole program. And those are the real stand-up guys. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time to maybe catapult some of the allegations or some of the evidence, you know, in the public eye.
Well, I really admired the way you did that. And I remember at that, do you remember that Tea Party rally where Katie Pavlich was there years ago?
I was so honored to be there. That was really cool.
You know, one thing that struck me about you is that you like apologized to everybody, and you apologize, and you said, "I wish I had stood up sooner." And your sincerity and honor just really struck me and shined through. I don't know if you remember saying that, but you.
Well, I appreciate that, but I that's always been my. My biggest regret is out of fear of reprisal or fear of the consequences I would suffer personally.
You suffered plenty, man.
Do what I would have always done in any other circumstance. So I fell short. I mean, of my own expectations.
I don't think so. now you sound like
I was scared. I was scared of what my agency and the government would do to me, and rightfully so. I mean, they caved my head in. They caved Jay Bird's head in. They caved your head in. Anytime you hold the government the same standard they expect you to hold the American public to, they get angry.
Oh, and vengeful. And yeah, you know, I always say that if I had come back in time a couple years before what happened to me happened and told me my story, I wouldn't have believed it. I would not have believed that the government, you know, that I signed up to serve could be so petty and vengeful and spend all their time going after whistleblowers. But, you know, once you're through
I don't even know who quoted or who owns the quote, but somebody, it was one of the people in my book, said the most, oh, I know who it was, and I don't want to bust him out because the story's not in the book. He said, you know, the biggest organized crime, most corrupt organized crime organization I've ever been involved in investigating was U.S. government.
Yeah. I remember at the end, the last couple of years with the DEA, I thought I was hanging out with a bunch of crooks. And that's kind of hard to say, but I watched all of my peerage go to other organizations because they weren't welcome there anymore. I watched the culture change, and you talk about that in your book. And I remember the old days, you know, with the, I don't even know if I can tell that joke on the air, but you know, what the big drawer the government desk is for, the lower drawer and the upper drawer, you know, the lower drawer is for the bottle of whiskey and the upper drawer, I'm not even going to go there, but I'm sure you know that joke, but
yeah.
It was play hard and work hard. And that was understood. And there was also, you know, a circle that you didn't want to give anybody up. But I think it's really valuable because make no mistake, Vince, there's a lot of soldiers, spies, and cops listening right now. And I think it's very valuable to hear from you that, you know.
Well, let's just put this out there and I will own this. And everybody can hate on me and disagree as much as they want. But there's a huge leap between being a rat and exposing institutional corruption. Those are two different animals. And when the government, who is paid to serve the community, becomes corrupt, that's everybody's problem, and you have an obligation. I mean, that's just the way that goes. If you don't have those stones stand up to it, then don't take the oath.
That is very eloquent. That is very impressive. And I hope
I have my moments.
You do. And when we're not kidding each other, I remember I was like, I was tying your tie at that last thing saying, oh, you UC stars, but you do. That is, I hope you young soldiers, intelligence officers, and law enforcement guys listener are listening to this. I heard the same thing from Jerry Boykin, General Boykin, ex-commander of Delta Force and INSCOM and chaplain, is because there's no expiration on your oath of enlistment. And I think what do you think? Because we're both veterans. I think we learned that in the military.
That's absolutely where I learned the concept of honor and not candy coating or justifying or mitigating misconduct or honor. It is an absolute, it's black and white. We all know it when we see it.
So I just love that there's a difference between standing up, being a whistleblower and a rat. And that is a great distinction because I think that can get real lost. And you look at the dossier and the stroke stuff and all this stuff going on with the FBI. You can see how they've gotten lost in all of that.
You have to start convincing yourself that your actions are justified and honorable. They're probably not. Again, Americans are basically honest and intelligent people. You know it when you see it.
Agreed. Listen, I got to take a break, but could you stick around for the break? Because I'd really like to, I just love
sure,
what you're
only
saying.
Because it's you, because I'm
Okay.
I just got off a long road trip, I would love to hang with you for a minute.
All right, man. Stand by. We'll be right back. I appreciate it. We'll be right back after this break. Jeff Prath on the Prather Point. Back right with you. Talking to Vince Cefalu, author of Rat Snakes, ATF Special Agent Undercover Extraordinaire, and Fast and Furious Whistleblower, and former Marine veteran. And, you know, Vince, When I went through this, it took me a long time until I started talking to other people who had gone through it. Like, you know, I got sick when I was getting fired, and then I found out, oh, you know, whistleblowing destroys your immune system. And then I saw this whole culture of this happening. I started tying in, you know, from my end, you know, Fast and Furious started at DEA in Phoenix, and the guns were going to the Sinaloa cartel. Niebla Zambada trial, DEA agents told everybody that they had had a deal. So it all started to fit, and we've talked about that over the years. And then the Benghazi gun running, and then the Syrian gun running that I was talking, I don't know if you heard the first part of the show, I've tried to connect those dots for people. And so I was hoping that you would have some insight looking at what's going on today to further connect those dots and hopefully we're correcting these terrible abuses. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I have thoughts. I don't know whether we can or cannot connect dots, but we see a pattern of behavior. We see consistent misjudgments. We see politicizing and justifying and somehow making what would normally be a pretty clear judgment muddy. They muddy the waters. Come on. There is no scenario in the world where letting guns, when you have the ability to intercept, go across the border, knowing that they will be going to violent cartels, there is not a scenario out there that justifies that. And that's why I was so angry about Fast and Furious. John Dodson and them predicted what would happen, and it did.
John Dodson almost literally said, you're going to be going to, if I remember John's quote correctly, because if you do this, you're going to be going to the funerals of border deputy sheriffs and border patrol agents. That's the quote, isn't it?
He was spot on. And anybody who looked at it knew that. So how a bureaucracy can twist and turn and misdirect, you know, they came at me with zero justification. And in fact, their own bosses committed perjury under oath, and it was proven, and they were all allowed to go on and retire and do what they do. As long as that is allowed to happen, we're going to have more or less transparency in government, more of these issues come up.
Yeah, and
that was an operation that should have never occurred.
Yeah, so I hope you guys are listening out there, especially I'm wearing my blue stripe flag today for the blue circle, is they committed perjury. And they, even the judge, even in Jay's case, came out and said all the DOJ, I think there were seven DOJ lawyers, the judge said, committed perjury. They did it to me, and they're doing it right now, and they're doing it with Trump. That's how I was able to predict all this stuff. I'm like, people would ask me, how can you predict all that? I'm like, because it was done to me 10 years ago, and it's still going on, and it's being done against, and if they'll do it against sworn federal special agents, 1811s,
they'll do it against anybody.
Exactly.
Imagine what they would do to an average citizen.
And they are
trying to be forthright and report government malfeasance. Oh, they would crush an average civilian.
Well, and I think they have. I think the guy in Oregon it was kind of an L-shaped ambush, and I think
Bundy thing.
Yeah. I think we're seeing a lot of that. I think it's starting to come out because of the new citizen journalism, and they just can't keep that under wraps anymore. But and you're right, it's not connecting the dots. It's a pattern of behavior. That's a much better, and that's showing your 1811 investigative terminology there correctly. But it's but the pattern continues.
Well, until you hammer, and that was not my first choice of words.
Because he's talking about the NSA hammer that spied on everybody. That's what he's referring to there.
Until you hammer these bureaucrats who encourage, conceive, advance these unethical government practices, until you put them in jail, fire them, demote them, whatever is the appropriate response, they have an unwritten rule within the government. If you're a boss, just hang tight. We have enough lawyers. You will never, the issue will never see the light of day. And that's what they do. And they took me right up. I was due to go to a trial on Monday morning, took me up to Friday the night before and offered settlement. And I settled. But that's what they did. They tried to break me down. They tried to break Jay down. They tried to break John Dodson down. They tried to break you down. And ultimately, if you don't break, then some sunlight gets shown on the issue. But it's always, you know, swept under the carpet. I would have given up everything in my settlement if Senator Grassley or Chairman Issa could have gotten severe consequences for the foolishness we pulled in Fast and Furious. If they would have indicted or arrested or demoted or fired those responsible, I would have gladly called it a day.
That's, and it's a long road. You just finished in 2014, I think.
Yeah.
I think Jay still, I talked to Jay a while back, but is he still doing his or, I mean, he's...
Oh, dude, don't even get me started on that because I got places to be and things to do, and that's a 30-minute conversation. The short version is Judge Allegra laid out the government for corruption, appointed a special master to investigate the corruption. Unfortunately, Judge Allegra died, and at that point...
Was that a suicide, too?
...the master and everybody else had the ability to just disregard the allegations from a sitting federal judge. Government appealed it, and the government won on appeal.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Jay told me...
It is the biggest misguidance of justice. Nobody has been hammered worse than that guy being Jay Dobbins. And
he was before
no
both of us.
And he won his case. But the director of ATF told him, you will never see a dime. You will never be compensated for this if it's the last thing I do. And that's what they did. They were able to mire it in legal, gray areas and convince court of appeals that it was not a justifiable verdict, which it was. When you have seven corrupt government attorneys, that's corruption.
Oh, that's serious. I mean, and that's from the top. You know, how I knew it came from the top is when they flew me out to New York, from New York to LA for a whole week to ask me one question. And I'm like, no, one rogue OPR guy doesn't have the juice. This is coming from the top. And then I figured it out. But the other thing, as I liked in your book, was you called out that who goes to OPR, and that's Officer Professional Responsibility, that you guys call it internal affairs for the TV shows, is guys who can't make it on the street. Because they get promoted to a 14 there, they get a promotion, and so then they're not the cream of the crop; they're the bottom of the barrel, and they're the worst liars in the whole agency. Or am I misrepresenting your right?
I can't speak for all agencies, but within ATF, they were literally the dregs. They had nowhere to put them; they couldn't perform on the street. So they promoted them up. That's what they do. I mean,
Well, that was certainly the case in DEA as well. And of course, there's no doubt about the FBI, which we've both worked with great FBI agents, but you know, the outside population thinks the FBI are just, you know, everything. But inside, we've both known FBI guys who never cuffed anybody in their entire career.
Well, yeah, their institutional culture was solidified, you know, decades ago, and they jump on the big ones and do the average day-to-day work that FBI agents do. You know, their management, their leadership has done the same thing that my agency did, and they've acquiesced to having a big sticker, a big poster on the wall, as opposed to doing what they get paid to do.
Well, so we're running out of time here, but I really like what you're saying. I really like the book. It's Rat Snakes. And I really like how, like me, except you were way before me, you know, you just continue to serve your country, military, law enforcement, and speaking out as a citizen. And I want to encourage you youngsters, you whippersnappers listening to us old timers now, that you got to do the same. Tag, you're it, because we're done. Any last parting words, Vince?
No, only that, you know, I believe this country has come through so many troubled times. We'll do it again. And I believe in, you know, the kids that are raising their right hand now, that they mean it. They've shown it in Afghanistan, Iraq, in the streets of Baltimore, in the cities of Oakland, San Francisco. We'll be okay. Because it's always going to be those guys that, when they raise their hand, they believe it. And so we'll be good. We're good.
I love that, man. That is excellent. Well, thanks for calling up. I think it really helped.
Thanks for having me, buddy. Stay in touch, will you?
Will do. Take care, man. This is Jeff Prather wrapping up a really important show on the Prather Point. I'll be back with you next week. Keep our fallen in your prayers. Jeff Prather on the Prather Point, the Perfection Auto Work Studios. Talk to you next week.